Hello and welcome to the Leap of Faith. Well, in a week that's seen the celebration of International Women's Day, there's a renewed focus on women in the church, not only today, but right back to the time of Christ and the role of Mary Magdalene. At the Voices of Faith conference in Rome yesterday, former President Mary McAleese called the Catholic Church an empire of misogyny, describing its ban on female priests as pure codology.
Now, this regrettable situation arises because the Catholic Church has long since been a primary global carrier of the toxic virus of misogyny. Its leadership has never sought a cure for that virus, though the cure is freely available. Its name is equality.
Back home, there's news that an event to honour survivors of Magdalene Laundries will be held in Dublin this summer. The Justice for Magdalene's research group hopes to bring together over 200 survivors, and it's calling on the Department of Justice, which holds contact details for survivors, to assist in formally contacting them on its behalf. And next week sees the release of a film which brings a fresh perspective on the often historically marginalised figure of Mary Magdalene.
God's kingdom is not to be bought and sold!
We need to take him away from here.
Whatever happens now, it's what God has asked of him.
Mary, you are my witness.
I'll be with you to the end.
Never speak again in his name.
The world will only change as we change. I will not be silent. I will be heard.
Mary Magdalene, a film starring Hollywood actors Rooney Mara and Joaquin Phoenix, bringing its own voice to the current debate around the role of women in the church. But first to another controversy involving the Catholic Church right now, and that relates to the definition of family. The World Meeting of Families 2018 will be taking place this August in Dublin, and it will probably include a visit by Pope Francis. Well, earlier this year, we heard how five pictures featuring same-sex couples had been removed from a reissued booklet sent to Catholic parishes in preparation for this event. The World Meeting of Families 2018 has subsequently stated that Pope Francis specifically stresses every person, regardless of sexual orientation, ought to be respected in his or her dignity and treated with consideration, and that the meeting has always been understood as a meeting open to all. Then, earlier this week, we heard how one bishop's words of welcome for gay people raising children and people in second marriages had been removed from a video promoting the same event. Auxiliary Bishop David O'Connell is a Cork man and based in Los Angeles, and this is an extract from his contribution, which was deleted.
Pope Francis, he gets it. He gets it that our society has changed so much in the last couple of generations. We have all sorts of configurations of families now, whether it's just the traditional family of mum and dad together, or it's now mum on her own, or dad on his own, or a gay couple raising children, or people in second marriages. No matter what the configuration of the family is, the call is still to adults to think about how to provide the best, most loving, faithful environment for children possible.
The Association of Catholic Priests in Ireland has said that it finds it impossible to understand why these words were removed. Earlier, I spoke with Father Tim Hazelwood from the association, who's also a parish priest in County Cork, and I began by asking him what it was exactly that he found impossible to understand.
I suppose, Michael, maybe just to give a background to where I'm coming from, I'm a priest in a rural parish in East Cork, where every day I suppose, engage with family. I suppose you could say the modern family. You know, it's people of different, it's made up different units. You know, you have single parents, we have divorced, we have or gay couples. So in that light, this is on the ground, this is the reality, and this is the reality that Pope Francis has spoken about and has said, like, we have to be open, and this World Meeting of Families, and it has been said by the organisers that it's a welcome for all at the event. Now, we've had a few incidents leading up to this where there was a picture taken down off of a promotional poster, and now Bishop O'Connell of Los Angeles and his piece taken out, where he says more or less the same. So we find it hard to believe that you say one thing and it seems that you do another. So we're looking for clarity.
And clarity seems to be the issue here, because we're talking about Bishop David O'Connell. He's originally from Cork, funnily enough, but he says in the video, Pope Francis, he gets it. He gets it that our society has changed so much in the last couple of generations. And we're told by a spokesperson that that was the wrong video that was put up.
You see, that's a bit incredible to believe, that something which was very professionally done, and now all of a sudden, it's not the right video. So, and again, this is on top of the other incident. So it seems to us in the Association of Catholic Priests that somebody is insisting or has a strong influence on the organisers. And that's why we ask a few other questions, like, where's the finance coming from? Like, at parish level, we have been inundated with literature. And, like, if you were to pay for some of this, I'd love to know where the money is coming from. So is there some group who have a lot of money who want to have an influence? It seems to us. But even if that clarification was made, it would be helpful.
Are you suggesting that with the funding comes an influence?
Well, it seems, usually that's the way things work in the world. But we find it hard to believe that Pope Francis is giving this strong message about including all families, and one incident after another raises all these doubts. And like at ground level, people are beginning to wonder. Like, I can imagine what it must be like now for a family with a gay child, or, you know, a gay couple with children. Are they really welcome with this kind of thing happening? You know, it's like scoring an own goal. We're constantly, it seems that that's the way it's being run.
Well, if you're suggesting then that there is an influence that doesn't want this to be as inclusive an event as you're talking about, who might those people be? I mean, the argument could be these could be people who are following the letter of their Catholic, Roman Catholic faith to the letter.
It seems, well, I suppose within every organisation there are people with different beliefs and different outlooks, and there are within the church those who would like if we did everything by the letter of the law. And even at local level, we see that in parishes where people are not very flexible, and that creates problems, because the reality is that family life is complex and people are complex, and I think the gospel and Jesus allowed for people. People are not perfect. So we try to bring people along and help people, but by the letter of the law, it sounds very much like the Pharisees.
There are people who have an idea that to open up this group to all people is against their primary faith.
Yes, that's the reality. There are people that's, I suppose, the model that they work from. But for us, I suppose our outlook was very much based on Vatican II, and on what I suppose the outlook of Pope Francis, what Pope Francis is saying, you know, that
for you as a priest in a parish, is it clear to you what Pope Francis is saying?
It is, and that's what. It's very much based on Vatican II, and we find it incredible actually in Ireland that we don't hear from our leaders enough support for the ideas. Like one of the things that he talks about. This inverted pyramid, whereby those in leadership serve the people. So, like, we've, as an organisation, we've asked for a synod here in Ireland. And, you know, that we listen to the people. We hear what life is like for them. And we actually, in the Association of Catholic Priests, coming up to the visit of Pope Francis, are going to organise regional meetings for people, for anyone who wants to come. What would you like to say to Pope Francis? Because we believe that listening is where we should begin, but we're not hearing it from our leaders. We're asking. Limerick Diocese held a synod where people within the diocese were listened to, were engaged with, but for the vast majority of the country, that's not happening. And we would like, if that was the direction Pope Francis is talking about, that the church should go.
You asked in the Irish Times as an organisation, you asked recently for a clarification from the Archbishop of Dublin, Diarmaid Martin.
Well, he's the one who knows about it. It's going to happen in Dublin. Father Timothy Bartlett, who was one of the chief organiser, works in conjunction with the Archbishop. So they have the information. So we're just asking him, you know, to put people's minds at ease. Just let people know what is going on. Is there an influence at work? You know, because the impression is out there is that if you're not the perfect family, you're not welcome. And that's not what Pope Francis or what the World Meteor Families was meant to be. So I think it needs clarification.
Father Tim Hazelwood from the Association of Catholic Priests in Ireland there, who joined me from his parish in County Cork. And we did invite Archbishop of Dublin, Diarmaid Martin, and Father Tim Bartlett onto this evening's programme, but neither were available at this point in time.
Mary, you brought shame on our family.
There's something unnatural inside you.
Stay.
Your family says you grapple with the demon.
If there's a demon in me, it's always been there.
There are no demons here.
A clip there from the film Mary Magdalene, the first film by Gareth Davis since his Academy Award nominated Lion. And it has a good cast in it too. Rooney Mara from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Academy Award nominee Joaquin Phoenix from Walk the Line. Well, it featured recently and as part of the listing of films at the Audi Dublin International Film Festival. Well, to discuss it more on the programme this evening, we're joined in studio by Assistant Professor in Hebrew, Bible and Old Testament and a regular to our programme, Dr. David Shepherd. David, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Indeed. And you've got a chance to see this film, which is the important thing. It is an idea that when Hollywood turns its attention to a topic like this, it's either for, you know, those who are religious and will want the story or for the general populace. Which do you think was their focus?
Well, I'm sure they're hoping that everybody will come to see it. And I think they have great hopes for instance, an audience in Ireland. Those who have a particular affinity for women's stories, women's films, might be likely to come see it, I suppose. Those who maybe know of Mary Magdalene somewhere in the vague, dim recesses of their mind from church or from Sunday school or something, they may be interested in coming too. Whether the broader population is likely to come and see it, they might wonder who on earth Mary Magdalene is. That's a question. I guess we're gonna find out.
Okay, well, we'll look at the film itself first from the point of view of you're a person who loves your movies, you like film.
Yeah, sure.
So how did you rate this as a storytelling experience?
I mean, I think it tells a story. It tells an interesting story. And in fact, the Gospels give a lot of scope for a story to be told, not because they supply a lot of story, but because they say so little about Mary Magdalene, really. That it allows the filmmakers a lot of scope to weave a story of their own making. And the story, the challenge of the story is that it, of course, has to follow the main events, which are sort of documented in a way in the Gospels. And so it weaves in and out through those documented events. So we know how it ends. And I think that's one of the challenges, of course, of making a film like this, is that we kind of know the story, we know how it ends. I suppose the interesting thing is how we get there. And we're not used to Mary Magdalene featuring so prominently in a story, which is a story.
And yet she has in popular culture. She featured in Jesus Christ Superstar, I Don't Know How to Love Him. Do you remember that wonderful song that she sang? Martin Scorsese's film as well, The Passion of Christ. Although that suggested, I think, in its storyline that there was a relationship there. Is that in this film?
Scorsese in Last Temptation of Christ is really quite explicit, or certainly leans directly into the suggestion that there's a kind of erotic relationship.
Although it's a dream sequence, I think, in the film itself.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But there's a sense of eroticism between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, if only in his mind, right? That was enough to provoke all kinds of reaction. Here, I think the relationship between Jesus and Mary Magdalene is pretty finely balanced. I think the filmmakers were mindful of going too far in either direction. So I think there are moments where there's a level of intimacy between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, there are moments of physical intimacy in terms of closeness, of physical touch. But actually, it's very interesting because there's a moment where Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene are speaking with each other. That's not, of course, from the gospel, but it's this moment created in the film. And Mary, the mother of Jesus, compares her love to the love that Mary Magdalene has, or that she observes that she has for Jesus. And so actually, I think in that moment, that's a way for the filmmakers to sort of step back and say, yes, you've seen the intimacy between Jesus and Mary. Clearly, Mary cares for Jesus, but actually, Mary, the mother of Jesus, compares her love. And I think it's a way of kind of painting Mary Magdalene's love as a kind of safe maternal love that will seek to protect Jesus. So I think that's where it's going generally.
I did a quick straw poll with a few people before having the chat with you and asked, you know, what do you know about Mary Magdalene? Oh, the prostitute from the Bible is the story that came back from so many people with a sure. You know, a fairly basic level of religious knowledge. Sure. Well, she stitched up, as the story is, Pope Gregory back in the Middle Ages decided that she needed to be taken down a peg or two.
Oh, there's a rich history and a kind of scandalous history in a way, in terms of the kind of treatment of Mary Magdalene. She's there on the page and she can't scream out. But if she could scream out, I think she would have screamed out to say, not guilty. And look, there are passages within the New Testament that have blatantly and patently nothing to do with Mary Magdalene. One in particular from Luke chapter 7, where a woman, a sinful woman, as the text describes, famously looses her hair and washes Jesus' feet and dries them with her hair, etc. Now, this has been associated with Mary Magdalene, and the sin seems to have stuck. And in part, you can perhaps attribute this to the fact that Mary is an intriguing character, but about which is said very little. And so there's a desire to kind of connect the dots. But in fact, there's no evidence whatsoever. And so this is a stitch-up on the part of later traditions to sort of try and paint, maybe dramatize and paint Mary as the redeemed sinner.
Because there's a sense of almost a little bit of a conspiracy, because one of the things that does come from the film is that there's a very strained relationship between Mary Magdalene and Peter. And there is a point in the film where he turns to her and says, "Oi, you know, don't speak his name."
Yeah, it's very interesting. Of course, the film's very, you know, it's really focused on Mary's relationship with Jesus, but at the same time, very much focused on Mary's relationship with Peter. And that relationship, those two relationships, you know, you walk with them through the film. And there are simmering moments of tension between Mary and Peter. There's a scene where Mary, on her own initiative, sort of against Peter's wishes, goes and helps some people who are in desperate need of help. And Peter, I think, recognizes the virtues of that. But at the end of the film, as you say, there's a moment where Mary comes to tell Peter and the rest of the male disciples what has happened, this incredible thing which has happened, Jesus' resurrection, and Peter doesn't like it one little bit. And in fact, there's a long tradition of Peter not liking that. The Gospel of Mary, which is a kind of much later gospel, has a scene very similar to this. So that's a very interesting moment in the film, and it kind of allows Mary to say, well, I am going to speak. My voice is going to be heard. And in fact, it kind of makes her into a sort of promoter of her own film, because, of course, the film is itself a way to let Mary's voice be heard.
Did you learn anything from watching the film?
I didn't learn much more about Mary, in the sense that we learned something historical from the film about Mary, because we have very little that goes back to that time, you know, in the Gospels. I think I learned, and I think quite a few people will be maybe unaware, that the Church, the Catholic Church, the Vatican itself, has sought to sort of rehabilitate, has already sought to rehabilitate Mary. And so in a way, that's at the very end of the film. But that's the kind of raison d'etre of the film, in a way, to kind of rehabilitate Mary, with the Vatican maybe 2 years ago sought to do that.
If we go back to the Gospels as a source, I think Mary Magdalene's mentioned, what, about 12 times overall, roughly, is the figure that I was able to research. And she's as mentioned as much as Mary, or the mother of Jesus, mm-hmm. more than any other woman. Is that what is guiding our insight into Mary Magdalene, our thinking?
Yeah, Mary features not so often by name within the Gospels, but women in general, and women of whom she is one, are pretty prominent within the Gospels. Mary herself is mentioned by Luke as a companion, as one of a few women who are companions along with the male disciples. And then probably she really comes into her own at the end. In Mark's Gospel, she's there with other women, and then she leaves the site of the tomb, but witnesses the empty tomb. In John, you find the most developed account of Mary Magdalene, and that's the one where she confuses Jesus with the gardener has that conversation with Jesus with a real moment of intimacy. And in fact, that moment definitely inspires that scene in the film. It's John's gospel at that point that inspires.
But for people who follow a faith that's based on a resurrection, she's at a pivotal point in the whole story.
Oh, she's absolutely crucial as a witness. And what's really interesting, I think, is that while the Gospels attest to the significance of Mary as a witness to the resurrection, Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, which may be one of the earliest short accounts of the resurrection, talks about Peter as a witness to the resurrection, talks about the disciples, the 12 as a witness, and many other men, and doesn't mention Mary at all.
Another thing I'd like to do, if I could for a moment, is just tap into your own insight into the Hebrew Bible and the Old Testament, because we had Amy Jill Levine on our program a while back, and she talked about being aware of the power and position women had in Jewish society at the time, that to see Mary Magdalene as an underdog or as a victim of her circumstances might be inaccurate. They held property. They were free to travel.
Yeah. I think that's helpful, and like it's a useful insight, I think. That passage in Luke, which mentions Mary Magdalene, mentions women, other women, and mentions them specifically because they are women who contributed financially, materially to Jesus' ministry and enabled him to go and teach and do the things that he did. The question of where Mary fits within this group of women and her background, you know, it's a sort of tricky question to lay hold of, because Luke, in that very passage, refers to her as the woman from whom seven spirits were removed or taken. If that's in some way faithful to the account of things, then actually she may have been one of the women who were very prosperous and independent, etc. She could, though, have been somebody who was already socially marginalized.
It is ironic that you don't have to go back 2,000 years to find that women who were awkward to their family or their family's plans were described as being unfit or otherwise and put in an asylum, and you know, and the name Magdalene attached to it. It is a very strange idea that has rolled forward up to 2,000 years later.
Yeah, there's a scene in the film where, and it's very interesting because it connects with these spirits which Luke talks about, and there's a scene in the film that deals with this, grapples with this question of are there spirits within, you know, what needs to be exorcised from Mary. And the film takes a very interesting tack because it suggests that while her male family members and other parts of the religious community think that there's a sort of a spirit, an unclean spirit in her, which is causing her to do strange things, like reject the opportunity to marry somebody who's very appropriate, Jesus comes and says, there's no spirit in you. And it's a quite interesting take on the idea that Jesus exorcised these demons from her. Not entirely consonant with the gospel tradition, but an interesting, I think it reflects a discomfort, frankly, with the idea that somehow Mary was possessed in some way, which Luke's gospel at least suggests.
A bit of controversy to the film as well itself, in that it was originally due to be released in the United States, but Harvey Weinstein's company withdrew it, and it's now being released under Universal. So that in itself is an interesting byline to the film Mary Magdalene, which is on general release from next week. David Shepherd, thank you for joining us on The Leap of Faith.
Pleasure.
And that's all we've time for on The Leap of Faith this week. If you'd like to contact us here on the programme, you can email us, faith@rte.ie. From all of us here this evening, goodbye.